Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Stephen Cash Nickerson, and we speak with him on his very important book, The Samurai Listener.
When I thought about listening, I did use my experience in martial arts to help me, because there were many occasions, as I realized over the years of studying martial arts, where the top people seemed to know what was going to happen next. They knew. They knew what that person was going to do. How did they know that? And they were intensely sensing that person. And so as I thought about listening and thought about martial arts, the consequences of not paying attention in martial arts, not knowing what's going to happen, is that you get hit, you get hurt. So the consequences of not listening are nothing, very little. I mean, yeah, you know, you might have missed something, yeah, but our egos are strong enough to convince us that listening isn't all that important. I took a look at the martial arts, one, because I had an interest in it, two, because I thought this sensing really could teach us a lot about listening, and then also that why not look at something where the consequences, where people have to pay attention in a deep and profound way in order to be good at it.
Cash Nickerson is one of the original thinkers. And introducing him is not easy simply because he has done so much and so many diverse things. Cash is the chairman of the board and CEO at AKKA Group North America. An entrepreneur, lawyer, philanthropist, and martial artist with diverse background in law, business development, and finance. He has rich cross-industry experience from entrepreneurial startups to large law firm to large public corporation. Experienced in transportation and mobility, railroad, trucking, aerospace, and space. Known as an expert on leadership, employment, staffing, and workplace issues and opportunities, he is also founder and president of the David H. Nickerson Prostate Cancer Foundation. Cash is the author of 6 books, including Listening as a Martial Art, and a delightful travel book, A Texan in Tuscany. He's an accomplished martial artist in several arts, including karate, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and sistema. Now listen to this thoughtful episode with Cash Nickerson. Cash, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm thrilled to have you on the show, and I've been after you for a while to get you on and to talk about this quite amazing book that you have written. Tell me, what made you write this book?
Well, thank you, and I'm delighted to be here, and I'm glad that we finally were able to connect. Because listening is a topic that I can talk about for hours, ironically enough. I can speak about listening. I wrote the book because I had really questioned my own listening skills. And in 2014, so about 6 years ago, I really seriously started studying the subject. And I viewed listening as one of those sort of categories of soft skills. You know, if you look in the workplace and you ask yourself, who succeeds? Who gets ahead? And you have to explain why the most technical people don't run companies. You have to wonder. And listening seemed to me, as I studied the topic and look back on 30 plus years of a career in many different areas and disciplines, soft skills were really what gave people the edge. And I read things that said 85% of your success depends more on your soft skills than your technical skills. That doesn't mean you don't have to have technical skills. It just means there's a real powerful alchemy, unstudied side to the world. And you run into various presumptions. And one of them is that you can't teach those skills, that people are either sort of born charismatic or they're not. And the ones who are born charismatic take their technical skills really far in the workplace. And those who aren't born charismatic end up in cubicles, crunching numbers and things like that. So listening to me was one of those soft skills, and one of the ones where I also thought that it was teachable, learnable, where you can get better at it. And I myself was a great talker and decided to start with myself. And so I wrote a book. I wrote a book called Listening as a Martial Art, which was a series of essays I had written. And it was, people had two reactions to it. One reaction was, wow, that's incredible. Thank you. And another reaction was, well, everybody knows those things. And so in the Samurai Listener, what I really tried to do is take it to the next level and take it to a level that provided actual exercises and actual dialogues and things to do, culminating in sort of like a 90-day tips to become a better listener, 90-day exercises. And so that's really, really what drove me to write the Samurai Listener.
You obviously have a lot of interest in martial arts, and a lot of sort of belief about martial arts is that it is so much about studying the other person and leveraging the other person. I see a connect between listening and martial arts. I mean, I'm not able to articulate it very well, but I hope you get what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. And I take a much broader view. When I thought about listening, I did use my experience in martial arts to help me, because there were many occasions, as I realized over the years of studying martial arts, where the top people seemed to know what was going to happen next. They knew. They knew what that person was going to do. How did they know that? And they were intensely sensing that person. And so as I thought about listening and thought about martial arts, the consequences of not paying attention in martial arts, not knowing what's going to happen, is that you get hit, you get hurt. So the consequences of not listening are nothing, very little. I mean, yeah, you might have missed something, yeah, but our egos are strong enough to convince us that listening isn't all that important. But in martial arts, the stakes are so high. You're going to get hit with a stick. You're going to get hit with a punch. You're going to get slapped. You're going to get submitted in a ground sport. And so I took a look at the martial arts, one, because I had an interest in it, two, because I thought this sensing really could teach us a lot about listening. And then also that, why not look at something where the consequences, where people have to pay attention in a deep and profound way in order to be good at it?
Why is it that we know that it's important to listen to the other person? Because if you're not listening and you're reading your own thoughts just for the opportunity for the other person to stop so that you can speak, which is what is the alternative and which is what most of us do, but we know that we are missing out a lot by not paying attention. And not to take away from the fact that this whole glorification of multitasking is also part of this problem of us not listening, because we are doing something else. We are doing something else. That brief moment when possibly you took the call, I would have the urge to check my phone as well, right? So that whole distracted scenario, why is it that we have stopped listening? What is the root cause of that?
It's a very good question. Some of it's tied up with egos, especially when you get into higher levels of organizations. It's interesting, as we get older, we become poorer listeners. One of my theories that I haven't fully studied, but I've seen some studies on it, is that, for example, we think people's memory goes down as they get older. And of course, there are physiological issues, but most people who forget something never heard it in the first place. And so our ego and our filters are just constantly being built. But you watch a young kid, they hear, see, feel everything. They're very sensitive because they haven't put up fences and walls in their world of things that just don't matter. You can say some words, and honestly, you can see it in the current dialogue that's taking place with respect to racial issues in the United States. I talk about people having their shields up. If your shield's up, you're not hearing, you're not listening, because you're just not receptive to what someone says, whether it's because of deeply rooted beliefs or whether your ego is just so strong. However you look at it, that's a real problem with respect to listening.
When did you wrote this book of essays, and what sort of made you think that I need to write a book? I need to write a book which will tell people how to learn to listen.
Yeah, it's really the result of people saying and thinking that they know these things. And it's knowing it doesn't help you. I say, fine. I say, pay attention. You say, I do. I read it. I get it. That's so basic. That's childish. That's first grade. But people don't do it. And so I really wanted to gut another level and have some actual exercises and some example dialogues of what it looks like, because the words are easy to understand, but changing your behavior, that's behavioral change, is a challenge. That's why there's so many, weight loss clinics, anti-smoking clinics, whatever, because understanding is easy. Behavioral change is hard, and to become a better listener, it requires behavioral change, not just understanding.
Okay, so you had the idea that you need to write the book. What did you do after that? Okay, I'm going to write a book about listening. So what next?
Very good question. What did I do next? So instead of writing essays as I had done in the past, which is one great way for people who want to write a book. You start, write an essay, and you put them together and you have a book. But what I did was try to break listening down into as many segments as I could, as many topics as I could. So I tried to come up with an acronym that people would remember. But first I said, okay, what are the pieces of listening? So that's when you get into, things like, okay, sure. Are you aware that you're talking? Okay, that's basic. Are you receptive to what someone's going to say? So I could show up, my ears are open, but I don't like you, so I'm really not listening. So I came up with those, are you present? I put them into an acronym, but they're things like persistence, all the things that it takes to actually have a successful engagement, engagement and understanding and persistence and, resolution, emotions, all these things affect our ability to take in. And so I try to get those down. So that's what I did next. I said, what is it? What do you need to really be successful? You get, something as simple as persistence. Are you willing to see it through? Or are you tired of the conversation and you check out, which is right. What we do a lot.
Right.
So that's what I did next.
So in the process, you are actually sort of structuring the book as well. that might not have been your objective, but that's what you were actually ending up doing, that you were structuring the book.
Exactly. I just wanted to break listening down into bite-sized segments and be able to talk meaningfully rather than just in general platitudes about, look, here's the elements. And if you're missing any one of these elements, you're degrading your ability to listen and understand. And from listening and understanding comes learning.
Yes.
So if you're hard-headed and you want to learn, then don't worry about listening. You're not going to, because you know it all.
Yeah. So this still was not the exercise part of the book. This is more the understanding part of the book. You still had the exercise part of the book to be lined up. What would you teach people so that they become better listeners? What was that 90-day plan? So that was still not there, or was it?
No. First, it was just, look, break down listening into all the things, you know, because you hear people say, well, 90% of life is showing up. Okay, but it's not. It's not 90%. It's important. In some ways, all these things are 100%. So no, at first I just had these, and then I thought the next step would be to explain each one of these things. What did I mean by that? What do I mean to be receptive? What do I mean by understanding? You know, what do I mean by each of these things? And then you could create exercises to try and teach these elements of listening.
It's time for a short break. I asked Cash Nickerson how exactly he went about creating the structure for the book and what resources and inspirations he drew upon. Cash outlines his process as we come back. He also says a good memory helps. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Right before the break, I asked Cash how exactly he went about creating the structure for the book and the inspirations it drew upon. Let's listen. So were you discussing this structure and these silos with anybody? Were you talking to people? How were you going about now adding meat to the... I mean, of course, you obviously had an idea of what you want to write, which is how this came about. But then once you start adding stories, starting instances, adding examples, you'd need to draw upon other inspirations or resources and so on. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, and so there it helps to have a good memory and to leaf back through. Once you've isolated something, then you leaf back through your experience of, in my case, you know, almost 35 years, and you in multiple different scenarios, and then you say, where did I see this? Where did it work, not work? And then that's where, you know, some of the stories come from to elucidate the concept.
Right. And were you finding any literature or any research that was going on which you could draw upon?
Yeah, it's interesting. Listening is an area that's really understudied. Mm. You can take lots of classes on speaking. In fact, I think when I was in high school, there was like a course you could take on public speaking.
Yes.
But you find me a class on things, basic things that are important, like listening. You find a class on listening. You know, you could take typing, you could take, there's so many things you could take, but listening. So there's very, very little literature on these kinds of skills. And also, I think in part, it's hard to study in a lab. You know, there's some, and I could tell because when it came to studying and reading about listening, you keep going back to this early study done many years ago, which said most all of communication is nonverbal. And what mostly people had done since then was just kind of criticize that study for being overly broad, or, you know, but that's, you had to go back to something like that. So it wasn't like there was a lot of new stuff. It was like everybody was kind of commenting on this old study that said how people's body language and their nonverbal cues, you know. So I think ultimately the words you used in that study were as little as 7% of communication. Everything else, tone, body language, and stuff, were way off the charts. Now, as I say in the book, it doesn't matter what that exact number is, whether that was overstated or not. We know that it's still high. It's an unglamorous topic. It's like trying to teach breathing, which is a very important skill.
I was thinking, as you were talking about it, and I was thinking, what is it that I strongly feel should be taught in schools? One is how to be a parent. Nobody teaches you how to bring up a kid. Everybody's a first-time parent, and you do what the hell you want. And mostly it is like a reaction to how you were brought up, and that may not be the best way to bring up another human being. So that's never taught. Nobody discusses it. It is not there, but it's such a big reality of life. And the other thing they don't teach you is how to deal with death. There's a lot of birthday parties, lots around joyous things, but nothing around grief, right? Anyway, but that's not part of this talk.
Here's what we do, and I talk about this in the book. In kindergarten, we play a game, and every culture seems to play this game, where the teacher lines everyone up or puts them in a circle, and the teacher says something in the ear of one of the students, who then repeats it to the person to her left or right. And then at the completion of the circuit, whatever the circuit is, the final person who hears it says what they heard from the person that they got the message from. And it's gobbledygook and does not compare to where things started. And we run that exercise and we say, wow, that's really amazing. But then we don't do anything about it.
Yes.
It's really a funny phenomenon. It's like, okay, well, we're bad listeners. Okay, what's next? Math. Okay, 2 + 2. It's really, really kind of humorous. The telephone game or whatever you call it in your culture, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're bad. We just accept it.
Yeah, yeah. I am totally with you on that. So let's pick up one of the chapters and talk about it a bit. Would you like to talk about persistence? Because that's one thing you mentioned. How does persistence lock into the idea of being a better listener?
Sure. It's an important one because, you know, you can show up, you can be receptive, you can want to understand, you can even be an active listener. But there can then just come a point at which you say, I get it. I've got it. I know. And then, so the unwillingness to persevere in a conversation is one of the enemies. And interestingly, some of the most incredible stuff comes at the end. Right. And depending upon the person with whom you're speaking, I have one business associate in my life where they would talk and talk and talk and talk, but none of that was what they really meant. And at the end, they would mutter something under their breath. And that's what they really meant. And if you study the people around you enough, you can, and use these techniques, you can learn how people really convey what they really, really care about. And everybody's kind of different in that regard. And so if you lack persistence, you're going to have trouble with that kind of person. I think also with introverts, because they can be in a conversation, because we're talking as if conversations are one-on-one, but of course many conversations are multiple people involved. And it may take introverts who just have as high IQ as extroverts, it may take them a long time to contribute, but when they contribute, it can be invaluable. And so if you give up on a conversation, whether it's one-on-one or a group, whether because of fatigue, whether because you feel like you get it, whether because you're bored, or very commonly, you're distracted. We all carry 100 things in our head, 1,000 things in our head at once. And that's why one of the things that I recommend, and it relates to persistence, is before you go into a meeting or a conversation, things that are on your mind, you better write them down somewhere, okay? And then set them aside and say, I'm going to come back to you. And then go in to the conversation with a clean slate as much as you can. It's difficult, but that... So there's a lot of things that can affect persistence. It's not just a matter of saying, I'm just going to try harder.
Sure. And I think it sort of brings back one thought that most of the problems that we are trying to solve can be attributed to communication.
Absolutely.
Let's get to the tools and techniques that you have spoken about in the book, listening and leading, listening and selling. And your 12-week plan.
It's these kinds of techniques, I think, are really helpful in a relationship. I write for the workplace. But if you just, I have 12 weeks where basically you're focusing on each one of these kinds of items, right? And so you take something like emotions. We know volatile people who react in sort of a volatile fashion oftentimes. And trying to identify someone like that in your circle, I say, and have a conversation with them and look again and try and see what's going to set them where they see they're going to be set off, and see if you can dial it back. See if you can bring them back. Back to persistence. If you study someone who you're speaking with, when they look away, they've stopped listening. Yeah. And so you know, these kinds of exercises where you say, look, watch for this. I tell people, they say, well, what do you do when somebody has stopped listening to you? And this is a really fun, easy technique. You just stop talking and they'll come back and you'll notice they're looking away and it gets quiet and they think, why is it quiet? And then they come back to you. So
I can totally believe that will work. That's interesting. What else would be high on your agenda in terms of cultivating your own ability to listen better?
You know, I think one thing to do is to let people around you know that you are working on it and ask them to hold you accountable. You know, I look at people who lose weight and they say, you know, the people who create accountability structures around them, especially letting other people know, sharing your weight with a friend, whatever, and listening is the same way. I now have to be a better listener because people around me, if I'm not, say, aren't you the guy that wrote the book about listening? You know, so I'm held accountable.
Yes.
So I would say let people know it's an area you want to work and let them hold you accountable.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Great, that's a wonderful note to end this discussion, Cash. I really appreciate your taking the time so early in the morning. I'm really sorry for pushing you.
It's good. No, it was my pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation.
I am sure that the readers of the book and people who will read the book would really find a lot of insights. I think this will be a great add-on to reading the book. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Coming up in the next episode is a very insightful and tactical conversation with Carl Gold, the chief data scientist at Zuora, on his book, Fighting Churn with Data, where he talks about using data to increase subscriber engagement and reduce churn.
Honestly, not really the technology has changed. The approach that I take changed, and it may surprise you and many listeners, because in the earlier days of my work, I used more AI and more machine learning, which you might think is the high-tech approach, actually. And over time, I shifted more towards an approach of using the data science to bring knowledge and understanding to the employees who were really dealing with churn. And that's actually, you know, one of the key lessons that I wanted to bring to people in my book is to don't focus on the AI for churn, because many people will say, oh, an AI can predict churn. And they're right. You know, AI programs can predict churn, but they're not good at telling you what to do about churn. And that's the problem, because every churn is different. Well, it's not true that every churn is different, but there are distinct reasons for churn. And if someone is churning for reason A, you don't want to apply the save tactic for reason B. So you have to be clear on what the reasons for churn are. And most AI and machine learning models are really unsuited to do this.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of weeks with great conversations with Melanie Daziel, Juan David Campolargo, Fred Kopstick, and many more.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.